Hey guys, you're listening to Snacks and Chats. It's actually a pretty serious podcast that just has a silly name. We basically interview a bunch of creative, interesting people, and generally we begin the interview with the question, when people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them? And that's because I find that what people's answer to that question is generally says a lot about their life experiences and how they feel society views them. So, hope you enjoy. All right, hey guys, Snacks and Chats.
Hey.
What's up?
I'm here with Jara Wasasala. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. On the come down after shows, but I'm good.
I went to your solo work, A World With Your Wound In It, and mm-hmm. you also did a group work, Orchids.
Yeah.
Like you say, the come down.
The come down is real.
The come down is real.
Because it must, I mean, how do you prepare and what's that like doing such intense work?
Yeah, I think my talking voice is on. I think it's always really hard with dance because there is such prep time. Mm. And for Orchids, like, we have been developing that for 4 years, and that was our first premiere of it was wow. the other week. And yeah. my solo, I've been working on it for 2 years, and it's the first time I felt like I was ready to present something that was closer to what I am kind of happy with, or closer to the world that I know is in my head and my body, but I wasn't like mature enough to present it yet. I had to spend a couple of years kind of like earning the right to perform that kind of work, I think. With poetry as well, it's so much simpler because I can just write a poem, run over it a bit, do it at an open mic or a poetry event and get that like instant gratification. Right. Whereas with dance, we have to be researching and developing and dancing 9 to 5 and trying to find this world that will only appear for 2 nights and then try and be okay with it. And I think it's, I think with most artists, there isn't really a lot spoken on post, and how we deal with the process that happens after a show is done, and how we look after ourselves and how we keep our creative world kind of running throughout our lives, so we don't feel yeah. like we're building up and then cutting ourselves off all the time. But it's still something I'm learning, and I think I'm the kind of artist that most of my themes, I call them like life works, so yeah. I feel like I'm always working on them, so it's not as devastating when a show's over, or else I would be in a fetal position on the couch crying after every show. But yeah, the come down's real, but the highs are much higher, so...
Well, that's yeah. good, yeah, because yeah. sometimes in life, sometimes the wins never feel as good as the losses yeah. feel bad, you know? Like, yeah. So that's good. I'm glad to hear that the highs are
yeah, and I'm definitely an artist that has to learn to not be so hard on myself. Mm-hmm. So that's also been a lesson this time around, is just how to enjoy what I'm doing and yep. not punish myself for not achieving something that's actually quite unachievable. Yeah, very, very Jara feeling.
Yeah, because I read somewhere you were asked, what is success to you? And you're like, it's...
not real.
It's not real.
Yeah.
Especially in the work that you do, it's yeah. not something that can be measured or whatever.
No, I think the work artists do is intangible and cannot be measured. I think, you know, accolades and titles and things like that, they're great, but they're for other people. Like, if an artist is really listening to their calling, then those things don't really matter. Like, they help support you in like a CV sense, or help support you in like applications, and that's kind of how I see it as well. Like, anything that I've like achieved in I don't know, the past few years, I don't kind of bind myself spiritually and hopefully emotionally to it, or else it really can hurt me when I'm trying to create new work, and that expectation can be too much. And I think it's also it's important for young artists who are still in training to not visualize success when they are training, because I feel like that's a real hindrance to their growth as human beings if they're trying to measure themselves up to people that don't even believe in that shit. you know, because like most people who are achieving those big things, you ask them like what matters and they're like, not that, you know, like none of that actually matters. So, I think also because for me, the stakes are much higher. They're more on a kind of spiritual, supernatural realm. So I think that's kept me more level headed in terms of trying to feel like I'm successful in my field. Yeah. Because I think connecting to other humans is the success. Yeah, and that can't be measured either. You might connect it to someone and they'll never tell you. But so it's like trying to be happy with what you're doing, I think, is the most important thing, which is also an impossible feat. Especially for me.
I'm going to ask you what I ask everyone. Yeah. And I think it will probably tie in with sort of a lot of what your work is about. So when people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them?
Where I'm from? I think it always depends on who's asking and how moody I feel that day. Yeah.
That is always the answer too, by the way. It's always the answer,
I think, I mean, I at the moment identify with being mixed race. And I always say that I'm mixed, but in the Pacific I hail from the islands of Fiji. That's kind of what I usually say because I know that that's what they're asking. They're not asking, like, how much balangi do you have? They're asking, why are you brown?
Exactly.
And why do you look that way?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of like my ethnic kind of answer.
Mm.
But I think if I'm being short with them, I'll usually say, like, not from here, or not from where you think, or like somewhere far away from here. But I think, but what's interesting is that that question is, you know, one of the fundamental themes in my work, and I feel like that's something that I'm actively trying to figure out live, is figuring out that conflict that so much of humanity is born with, or especially people who don't feel like they have really strong connections to their homeland, or they don't know what home looks like, or they have problems with feeling like their body is their home. I feel like that's a real core part of my work. So sometimes when people ask me, like, where are you from? I'm like, if you really want to see, if you want to see what that feels like for me, you know, my whole kind of career is based on that conflicting tension. But a beautiful tension, and a tension that's made me this and made me what I am now. But such like a eternal human question.
Yeah, right? Because people are like, where are you from? And you're like, I'm still figuring that out.
I
or I
know
where I'm from, but I'm yet to like fully connect or whatever. Yeah, it's almost everyone who I talk to, who especially if they're mixed race, but also like urban islanders or, you know, people whose ethnicities are not white, but they're from New Zealand or whatever it is. It's like this void and this constant search of, like, it's just this constant search of connection. Mm. And I think what you said when you said sometimes when you go back to the motherland, you feel nothing but guilt and shame and confused and challenged and triggered. Yeah, and I could really connect to that because it's like, oh, yeah, this is where I'm from, but I'm not, like, I don't have the language, I don't have the culture, I don't have the, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's like, because I've never had any of those things, and I, you know, spent, just like most people who are mixed, just spent most of my life either running away from it or not thinking that I could be a part of it. But there's definitely always been this very, very deep knowing that's been tied to instinct in terms of what I'm drawn to. And the instinct isn't very clear, or it isn't very concrete, or based on fact, but there are certain things that I'm drawn to as a person, as a woman, as a spiritual creature that always bring me back to my Pacific roots. And I usually learn about the rituals or the images or the practices years later, and I'll be like, how did I know about this when I didn't know about this? Yeah. Or there are times I've written poems about certain images and I find them in museums in New York. Mm. And I'm like, how did I know to write about that?
Yeah.
But because it's so ingrained, it's in the blood. So it's like that blood tie is what I rely on more than me knowing words or being religious or having protocol is because no human can tell me that I'm not connected when I have that instinct that drives me all the time. But yeah, so I think I've just become, as I've grown and matured, become more and more staunch in that fact rather than like letting myself be swayed or affected by people who don't know me or who will just look at me and be like, that's not us, you know, which has happened and is still happening.
So. Yeah, and it's, I think it's tough too because there's probably a lot of people who would find that surprising as well that you or that, you know, other people are like, yeah, I'm Fijian or I'm Samoan or whatever, but I also am missing that sort of connection or whatever that I'm insecure a little bit in that.
Yeah.
They might find that surprising because I think so much of who we are is framed as Fijian artist, Pacific artist or whatever, you know, like other people frame it that way.
It's so funny because for a long time people in like, I don't know, festivals or shows or applications or bios, they'd never put Pacific at the start of my name because I didn't look like one or I wasn't talking like one or I wasn't making work that one would make. But then all of a sudden, a few years ago, it started to change and all of a sudden I got Pacific at the front of every single title.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it all started when I started to go back to Fiji. And it wasn't anything I was consciously doing in terms of changing my name. It's just that it was almost like they started to want to recognize me or connect or... Yeah, it was very strange to watch. I remember being in uni and training and just wanting to be a part of something. And then all of a sudden, right when I was doing everything on my own, then that word started to get pushed next to my name. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's like I don't have to call myself a Pacific artist to make Pacific work.
Yeah.
Because inherently that's what it is because that's my bloodline.
Mm.
Also, I don't like the term Pacific anyway.
Yeah, I was just going to get onto that, yeah.
But so I don't specifically go out of my way to use that term unless I'm specifically applying for funding. I'm applying for things that I know I have to use that to kind of speak to these communities and be vocal and visible and present. Because I think that's the battle with... anything to do with like industries or media, most of the time, like, you know, people hype up media based stuff. They're always like, you know, oh, it's so cool you're doing this, or like this magazine cover, or like Nike, da da da. And, you know, but like in my body, like, I don't go out of my way to be like, I want to be on a magazine cover.
Mm.
That's not my goal at all. If you know me, I'm very self conscious about how I look. So that's not my end goal. But I know that they need more brown faces in it, so that's why I'm going to do it. And I know that if I get interviewed, they'll listen to what I'm saying, and that's why I do it.
Yeah.
So I think I definitely use titles when I need to, but it's always for kind of like a, like trying to be the thing that I didn't have when I was younger, like trying to be more visible. So
that's
it's a bit of a conflict because you have to like use the system against itself sometimes.
Mm.
But... yeah, I guess that's everyone's, like, personal conflict with it. It's, like, how they use it and how they don't use it or how they are used and how they aren't used by it, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting when you were talking about the Polynesian versus Melanesian thing, because people are always referring to you as Polynesian.
Yeah.
And you're like, but we don't even, that's not even our terminology, like... white people made that shit up to like describe. And I think maybe Lana Lopesi from Pantograph Punch had also like talked about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really interesting. It was something that I'd never really considered before even, you know, like, oh, why are we like putting ourselves into these?
Yeah, I've always felt really turned off by it. But I never used to know why until like a year ago. like it's really weird being the like mixed race one who's going overseas to be in these really academic spaces to kind of have these discussions and to have this discourse on politics in the Pacific and not feel worthy of being there. But then when I'm there, I realize the opportunity I have to take this stuff back and use it on like social media and in my work to kind of make it more our conversation rather than having them stay up in these places like in universities or overseas. So it wasn't until maybe early last year I first heard about Polynesia, Melanesia and Micronesia being problematic. I knew all the terms existed because so burpy.
Sorry, that's the code.
No, it's all good. I'm just like, trying to get like real into it and like half burping. But I was temporarily sitting in on the Pacific Advisory Board at the museum, and that's when I first heard about those terms being problematic, and that was last year. And then I was invited to Hawaii to teach poetry under Pacific Tongues, run by Liz Soto, and I was invited to just be in conversations with all these incredible academics of the Moana who like are just so researched and all doing their masters. And, you know, I was just like this like kid from Avondale, like, cool. Me, I'm just gonna like sit in the back. But I started to hear more and more about these terms and about their negative roots and about the Black Pacific and how that is never talked about. And about Polynesia being a blanket term to cover all of us and that all of these terms are inherently racist and inherently classist and they have roots in slavery with blackbirding in the Pacific and things like that. And I think it's weird, though, because we are all one, you know, like the division was from the outside and we didn't know that within our islands. And, you know, there's like this old thing of the holy trifecta being Samoa, Tonga and Fiji, but that splitting of them is what split the whole like beginning of this empire that was going to be happening. And these terms like Polynesia, Melanesia and Micronesia, like Melanesia is literally like melanin, like, you know, it's like it's not a nice term. Like it's meant to, they all are shade systems and how big your island is and things like that. You know, and Micronesia has been heavily bombed by the States and still is being bombed, yet we don't learn about that at all here. And we don't, because we're so in our like Polynesia vibe, we don't even see them as being our siblings in the Solomon Islands, in Guahan, in the Marshallese, like all these islands who are undergoing all this trauma. And we just have been taught to just not see them and be split from that, you know, that origin where we were
all
one.
How did they get split off?
Colonization. In most publications about me, if it said anything like that, it's always said Polynesian. And it's like, if you're going to use these racist terms, at least use the right one. Just because I'm light skinned doesn't mean that I inherently fall into this category, you know, like you are erasing a whole other sector of us. And I think that's it's a real loss, but, you know, it's not any of our fault. We're not taught this at all. It's not like in schools, you know, we have to go like leave New Zealand to even like, you know, we have so many elders here who aren't given the platforms to really like voice their work in curriculum and in schooling and things like that. So it's a combination of stuff, but it's definitely something I'm still trying to get my head around and how does it relate to my work and things like that.
And I guess that's what's like you were talking about, that information being so high level and then being able to bring it back. Because, yeah, it was literally the first I heard about it was on Twitter from Lana.
Yeah.
And then the next was from you on your Instagram story.
Yeah.
And I'd never... That's how I'm getting educated now. You know? And I tried And I tried to Google it. Like I was like, oh, I need to learn more about this, and I couldn't I couldn't find anything to learn more about it. So
I've had people like hit me up asking, for more information on it. And my information is still so limited. And it's frustrating because you want to be able to, you know, share all these things with everyone, but you're also limited in your knowledge and you're also quite young and the things you say aren't always taken seriously and, you know, so it's definitely still a thing I'm trying to navigate.
And so when people ask you what you do, what do you tell them?
Oh my gosh. What do I do? Sometimes I just say this.
See this?
See this situation that I'm dealing with. I think I'm also trying to figure out what terms I use because I feel like I'm starting to head more into like performance artist more than anything because I'm starting to merge everything way more. Again, it depends on who's asking and what community they're from. Like I'll say that I'm a trained contemporary dancer and I can wear that hat if I need to, like in Orchids, but that's definitely not like what I'd call my whole practice because I use poetry and I use, you know, more like activation based concepts and I use like projection and visuals and sound way more densely than like putting it on top at the end. But it's trying to explain contemporary dance to people is like so hard. I'm always like there's a video you can watch. I have it on my phone. You know, if you watch this music video, it kind of is a little bit like what I do. And if I try to describe it, everyone's like, oh, that. I'm like, no, not that thing that you're thinking about. We don't do like trees and wind and shit. Don't worry. It's much cooler than that. But it's so hard to explain what I do. But I think, and it's always like, if someone's just asking me fleetingly, I'm like, I don't have time to explain it. But if someone wants an actual conversation, then I'm so willing to go there and kind of try or attempt to just like touch on what I do or what people in my genre do actually, because it's way more of a community thing than like me doing anything by myself. But once they see what I do, then they're like, that's your shit. Yeah, you know? They're like, you do the Jara thing. I'm like, yes, it's a Jara thing. But I'm going to find a word for it one day. Mm. One day I'll have this like great word for it. At the moment it's just like raging. That's all I do. But it's also weird because like trying to find a term that fits is really hard, especially when you kind of don't really want one, but you need one again for like funding and media and things like that. And also when you don't feel like you really belong to either of those communities of poetry or contemporary dance, like I don't feel at all emotionally or spiritually connected to those communities, to certain people, definitely. Like I feel very bound to them, but in terms of the way the industry which isn't real works, it's not real. Industry is just as fake as success. It's something I'm still figuring out. If anyone has a really good word for it, let me know and I will consider it.
When I like there are like a couple of words when I watched your piece, like the one of them was just like, fuck, the physicality of what you do.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, I was just, apart from, like, the overall meaning or whatever, I was just like, how the fuck are you doing that?
Like, I think people don't realise how physical I am. I think they kind of think they have an idea, or if they see me do a poem, they think that's the kind of physicality I have. But that's why I'm always like, no, you have to come to my shows. Like, come to my shows and you can see what I can actually do. Like, because firstly, it's not what you think, and secondly, it's not of this realm at all. Like, I don't, you know, it's like I have contemporary dance technique as my base and my foundation, but the movement that I'm really trying to explore is like way beyond that. And yeah, it's so physical, but it's like the highest high I can find on this planet.
Because exercise releases endorphins, right? And I feel like that was probably
a lot of endorphins.
Yeah,
to the max.
Yeah, extreme. Like, so yeah. I can see how that happens. Yeah, and the other thing was just like, fuck, so brave. Like, just the way you put yourself out there is like fucking brave.
It's really interesting because I get that quite a bit. I get brave. I get you got a lot of courage. I get you have a lot of mana. I get things like that. But I was listening to this Kanye West interview the other day, and he was asked by an interviewer, you were said to make many brave, creative decisions. Like, what do you, like, oh no, they said, do they feel brave when you make them? And then he answered, there is nothing to be afraid of. And I think that's how I really, really feel about my work. And I'm always kind of surprised when people say that it feels or looks or seems brave, because for me, I'm not afraid. And this is the thing that feels the most true and the most closest to how I want to feel all the time. Like, I was saying this to someone, I was on a panel for the Orchids show, and I was explaining about how that state I'm in when I'm dancing, I wish I could stay there, because that's where I actually feel the safest, that's where I feel the most connected, the most powerful. But I also know that my human body and my human emotions have limits, and I actually can't handle staying there. But for me, it's there's no question on making work like this. This is kind of what I've always done, and I know that it serves as a place for others to understand their own courage and their own mana or their own fear. And I've said before that I'm more than willing to become everything you fear if it helps you, in that sense, on my terms. But yeah, for me, I don't feel like I have to become brave at all to do it. I just have to kind of let myself be present, and then it kind of just happens. And I just have to craft it using the techniques I've been taught, pretty much. But the essence of what it is has always been there, I think. And that's why I went into uni, just to learn how to refine and craft and train. But yeah.
How was that university experience?
you can only hear me, but I was just like quietly sipping my drink.
In answer to a question I read of yours, it seemed very diplomatic. Like the it was like the things that I learnt even through disappointment, or even through something that I was like, I wonder how that was.
Story, yeah.
Training is really interesting. It's not for everyone, and I say that to a lot of artists before they think about going into institutions. I say that they are built to break you. That's the whole point, and well, not the whole point, but that's a really big part of it. Is that they want to break you so you can figure out how much of you is left and how much of it can become the thing that you want to be. And sometimes they want to mold you into their idea of an artist. Some people go with that, still have dope careers. That's all good. But for me, that was never an option. And during training, I had a few really insane, beautiful tutors who had my back and who could understand where I was going, because I was a very, I'm not going to lie, I was a very like, still am intense, but very intense, very stubborn, very passionate, very hyper-emotional student. Yeah. And I didn't want to compromise the feeling I had. And the way I was supported was countered with just as much, if not more, resistance. And that was, I think that was really important for me to understand what, like, that kind of resistance felt like at that young age, and to also understand that not everyone, I'm not made for everyone, and there are some people in the world who won't get it and who won't get me and who don't know how to mentor or help me or even hear me. So I think I was told things during uni, like to stop doing poetry because it's a distraction. And I was kicked out of class for what I was wearing. And I was told that I'll never get a job for how I look, things like that. And I was the only brown girl in my class and when I was in first year in the school. And it was very isolating to kind of be in that environment with a whole year group who were already, you know, studio trained. I came from hip hop. I came from like Avondale. I didn't have, you know, ballet technique or contemporary technique or anything like that. So I was already underdog in this year group who were all, you know, so talented and beautiful dancers. And I used to just be like, why am I like this? Why does my body not do these things in ballet? Why can't I fit in these clothes the same way they do? Or why is it that every time I kind of express myself visually, I get told off for it when it's the only thing that like makes me feel safe in this environment? Mm. So I think, yeah, just as much as I was supported, I was also challenged. And I think that was all really important for me because I learned those lessons. At the time, it felt like it was massive and the end of the world.
Yeah.
But looking back, they were all little examples of the bigger things that I was going to face when I got out.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of those tutors ever actually intended to be malicious. They just kind of didn't understand. But I was lucky enough to have poetry and that community outside of dance to kind of support me. And I have an amazing mother and siblings who understood. But yeah, it was very hard. And it's not something that I would want to go back and relive. And but also very fruitful and incredible at the same time because it gave me the language I was missing. And it gave me the opportunity to become the thing that I knew I was going to be. Mm. So, yeah, it's so dependent on everyone's personality as to how they take institutions. Some just swim through it like so amazingly and do what they want. I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think and it's awesome now because like looking at the institutions now, they're just full of brown kids and they're all hip hop dancers coming through contemporary. I'm just like, this is so awesome. But yeah, it's also hard because there's not a lot of people ahead of me, older than me, who are doing this.
Who can like mentor you.
Yeah, who are in the same genre, who are more trained than me, you know, because it wasn't always an option for women of the Moana to be able to train in contemporary dance technique. So it's still a new ground, but yeah, it's definitely taught me a lot. But I honestly don't think I'd be as protected as I am now if I hadn't kind of learnt those things in those small ways ages ago when I was a young little moody brat.
Apart from like, you know, your identity, your ethnicity, that the exploration of that in your work, I feel like a lot of it is also about the woman, like the, you know, the strength of women, the weight of the world being put on woman.
I feel like that's, I feel like it's the theme of the universe right now.
Totally.
I really feel like the world as a woman's body has kind of been my mantra for the past 2 years. And that doesn't mean that I gender the earth at all because you kind of can't. But I do feel like that in this body I'm in and in the indigenous woman I see around me, there is a very strong connection to their bodies and the way the earth is manifesting right now and the way it's rupturing and the way it's treated and the way it's reacting to everything. I feel like revolution's dope. And just those two words together sound really weird. Revolution's really great. It's like, you know, and it's inevitable and it's a part of the human experience in terms of how us as people move forward. But all revolution starts in a singular person first and all change starts in your own body and you are indigenous to your body first, then the earth. So for me, I've always been, you know, quite affected by everything that's going on in the world, just and literally everything. Like I used to spend every night crying when I was a teenager, just about everything. But I think I quickly learned that if I can navigate this body, then I can navigate everything around me. And if I feel safe here, I can make real spaces safe. And if I can speak to this with love, I can speak to others with love. And if I can heal severed bits and heal conflict here, it affects the earth. And it's such like a, it's a really... there's a word for it, but it's like a really like ambitious way to think about yourself. But that is literally the sometimes the only thing we can do to affect change. And for me, change does happen in individuals, then it moves community, and then it moves nations. So for me, that's the center of everything, and that's where I'm trying to work from all the time. And that is like a kind of world belief also becomes the central mantra of all my creative work, because that's how I manifest anything that I believe in, is through my art. So I think that that concept, as well as belief, as well as like way to task and make material in a really practical way, it's all very connected for me, and it's all very, it's the central force in everything, is trying to really understand and navigate that relationship between my and our bodies and the body we stand on as well. And I think to be interested in it, it's almost a ridiculous question to ask myself, because I'm asked it like all the time by everyone, like, this is a really great concept. I'm like, it's not a concept. Like, I'm like, this is kind of like, it's just us being alive.
Yeah, like just don't fuck your body up. Like.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah. So I think it's a life work as well. I think it really got triggered by me learning about the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada when I was over there doing a residency, and how their cases, like thousands of women who are missing and murdered, and their cases don't get investigated at all because they're Indigenous. And I think learning about that really made me look at other places in the world and realize that the assault on a woman's body or on women in general is very much connected to how we have disconnected from the planet. Everything I'm reading, everything I'm watching, everything I'm looking at all seems to come right back to that very real feeling. And it's also, it's like super interesting to see artists around me, both like close and overseas, who all have the same concept. Like, it's not just me who's magically came across this. It's been going on. This is just my contribution to a very ancient conversation. And it's comforting to feel like we're all working on the same thing in different ways. So, like, the two shows I did, we're speaking to the same thing, but just very, very different versions of it, or very different takes on it, or just different aesthetics. But at the end of the day, it was about women, and it was about returning them to their place of honor and divinity, and like how they used to hold whole communities, and trying to return to what that could have felt like, or trying to, you know. So in the Orchid's work, it was definitely about trying to reestablish how women relate to each other, and exploring the dark and light elements of what it means to be a woman in this day and age. And then for my solo, it was about returning a demoted spirit back to being divine. So it's like similar concepts, but like at the end of the day, very like the same origin. So it's really comforting to not feel like I'm alone in this, because I think when I was younger, I was like, I'm definitely batshit crazy.
No one knows how I feel.
But it's a global thing right now, and I'm just stoked to be able to talk about it and not be in danger. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you laugh, but
I laugh, but it's very true.
Yeah. A good start.
I'll just ask you one more question, I guess goes back to probably a very important woman, but what was it about your upbringing that drew you to the arts, or to express yourself in this way?
I know. My mother she laid everything out on a table, both literally and metaphorically. She was very restricted from exploring anything in the arts. So I feel like she almost planned to have four children who are in the arts. Because, you know, it's like, it's so weird because I'm the oldest and I'm doing dance and poetry. Then my sister under me, Shaquille, she does film and performance herself. Then my little sister is a Toi Whakaari theatre graduate and my little brother's a musician. So I'm just like, I feel like she split herself into all the genres except no one can sing. But,
There's only so much you can do, really.
There's only so many arts we can, like, take over, you know? But I feel like she really laid the arts out as almost the first instinct rather than like a way to kind of exercise a demon. It's more like this is how you first respond to anything. Mm. And this is where you can feel safe and this is where you can deal with any trauma or conflict we had growing up. It was through the arts always. And I think all of us were also just naturally drawn to it. And very evident in the fact that we were drawn to really specific genres. But she made it a place to not feel afraid of ourselves when the whole world was telling us to be afraid of everything that we were. And she herself is Palangi, so she knew that there were spaces that she couldn't speak to. Mm. So she made sure that we were always able to try and navigate it through the arts and through others we could find in the arts. And she knew that was a priority for us four. And she's always been encouraging. I was never discouraged from trying anything and was always pushed harder. And I think she knows what each of our callings are beyond anything like human or anything like that. So she knew that the more of the arts that she offered as a safe place and as a powerful place, the more we would kind of align with those callings. And I think that's definitely kind of like starting to come into fruition for quite a few of us. But yeah, she was very special because if anyone meets her or like sees her, they're like, oh my God, you make so much sense. and even like beyond the arts, you know, she let us dress however we wanted. She let us like straighten our hair, which is so bad because like curly hair just doesn't need to be straightened. And she, you know, she took me to get my first tattoo when I was 16. Like she was very like, she let me like paint my face all the time in high school, let Mensch girls shave our like sides of our heads and stuff, you know. She was always very open with us expressing ourselves and was very on board with it. And yeah, she made our bodies a safe place, which I think not many children, let alone children of colour, let alone young women who are brown, they're not allowed to feel safe in their bodies. And yeah, she just made everything feel like art. Like the fact that, you know, I feel safe enough to show my body in public, you know, like more so than most people. Mm. That is a gift from her, that she made me feel safe enough in this, that I can walk around and express myself in this way and not feel afraid and not feel like, even though I've been made to feel afraid many times and kicked out of train stations or whatever. But she's a special one. She did a really good job, I think.
I can see how that Kanye quote applies then. Yeah. Like, yeah, there is no fear. Like,
I think the only fear is like, is connected to things that we can't control. But I can control what I say. I can control the art I make. I can control how I look. I can control the way I relate to others. I can't control how anyone like responds to me or how anyone reacts to me, and I can't control the way I am held or not held by audiences. But as long as everything in my body and in my will that I've made is safe and strong, then pretty much nothing can touch me, you know? So I think, that was a real gift from her.
Cool. Anything else you want to add at all? Throw out
I don't know. Anything else you want to ask? No. I love answering questions like that. It's so good.
No, awesome. I'm done.
Sick.
Eat your Maltesers,
man. Oh, my God. I will eat everything.
Never get to eat during
the I just talk so much shit.
Oh, hey, man. You made it to the end. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Snacks and Chats. If you liked it, tell your friends about it. Rate us and say nice things about us on iTunes, please. Tune in next time. Thank you.